episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor today is Bappe Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Anything John Deere in tractors, mowers, implements, go up and see them.
Sure,
3119. Oh, yeah, they got it all. 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at PappeMachinery.com. So there you have it.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
What
are we doing today?
Yeah, there you go. That's it.
That's
it's
it.
Over. Oh, so today we thought we'd take a break from the I forgot to update the little archive thing there, but our friend Dr. Peter Vincent Pry had written an article, Russia's Cyber Attacks Must Be Viewed with Nuclear Exercises, and I thought, huh, that's getting buried in all the drama about the budget, and I will post something on that, speaking of that, on the budget for you. There's no foreign aid in the coronavirus bill, by the way. That's all in the normal budget. It got voted at the same time, so it's easy to say that that was all in the same bill and they wrote it in the middle of the night, but yeah, that didn't actually happen that way. So anyway, I've got some good info. I'll post for you on the site on today's page when I get that all done, working on it now, but that is not what we're talking about today. And our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security and the Director of the U.S. Nuclear Strategy Forum. Both are congressional advisory boards. He served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, and the House Armed Services Committee. He was an intelligence officer with the CIA, responsible for analyzing Soviet and Russian nuclear strategy, which is how come he has so much great information for us today. He has a PhD in history and archaeology and another one in strategic studies, which is what led him to the CIA. He's the author of numerous books, and the most recent one is The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America, 2001 to 2020. And I've actually tagged all the books down on the page. You can go to wethepeopleradio.us, and all of his previous shows actually are listed there that he's done with us on different topics. The article for today entitled Cybergeddon, and I've got you a Word document. You can download or send or do what you like with it. And then it was posted on Newsmax, but it was one of those that you had to pay for to read. So if you'd like to read it, you should go to our site rather than Newsmax, unless you're a subscriber to, I forget what it was called. It wasn't premium, but something like that. Anyway, you can read the whole thing there. So, Dr. Pry, are you hiding in there?
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we determined that neither of us have lives, so we're...
Oh, nice.
Well, we were emailing on Christmas.
Glad I'm not in that group.
Well,
you were there.
Just say we have lives dedicated to saving America.
Yes, we do. I was just teasing, but yeah, I was like, oh, we shouldn't play an archive on Sunday. I'd really like to do that article. I wonder if he's doing anything. So
I have to apologize to your listeners about. I am a big fan of Newsmax and don't like to say anything negative, but there's this thing called Newsmax Platinum.
Oh, Platinum, you know, that was it, yeah.
Right, and they don't tell me. I write my articles for everybody, and I was frustrated when they published that one as Newsmax Platinum, which is supposed to be some sort of an honor because the Platinum subscribers tend to be, political and industrial leaders, you know, people who can afford to pay the price, you know, to subscribe to Newsmax Platinum. It's not just free to everybody. And, you know, on occasion, some of the articles that I consider most important, without telling me or without my permission, they'll publish them there. You know, behind that, I had offers from the Washington Times and The Hill, and I would have gone with them if I knew they were going to put it behind that paywall. Platinum. That's why I circulated it and sent it to you, so you've got a version of the article. And I even like my title better. You know, they changed it to something like you have to consider cyber attacks in connection with nuclear. You know, they like to put an idiot-proofed title in so people can kind of get the gist. And even that's not entirely correct. I just called it simply Cybergeddon.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm changing the title for today. I thought that was your title on the article. I thought, oh, well, I guess I better put the long version on there. Yeah.
I hate that title.
Oh, nice. Then, I'm trashing it then.
You know, my title was Cybergeddon, you know, which is to try to convey this new concept of warfare that the Russians and the Chinese and the North Koreans and the Iranians abide by, you know, where a war is not fought, or at least it isn't initially fought by traditional military forces, but it starts off with cyber and EMP attacks done jointly. And as a matter of fact, I say cyber and EMP so that we can understand it in the West. But when they talk about cyber warfare, or they also call it information warfare or electronic warfare, they have all different kinds of names for it. You know, to them, cyber warfare is not the same as it is to us, because it's much more broad and expansive, and it includes things like non-nuclear EMP, EMP attack, and it even includes some kind of kinetic attacks, like sending in small specialized forces, small teams to shoot up control stations and transformers. And the theory is that this, by means of cyber and EMP and physical sabotage used in combination, that you can win a war that way. You can win World War III that way without having to unleash, you know, huge tank armies, navies, air forces. All these traditional elements of war, in fact, can be rendered obsolete by this new way of warfare that's fought in cyberspace and in the electromagnetic spectrum. You know, attacking things like the electric grid, as opposed to attacking just military forces, but attacking the critical infrastructures that sustain civilization. And so you can win a war in 30 minutes, you know, by collapsing the electric grid and these other critical infrastructures. The cyber Pearl Harbor, I call it for shorthand, Cybergeddon, the combined arms use of all of these, capabilities. And, you know, we're so vulnerable to this. First of all, it's not just a physical vulnerability and the fact that our infrastructures are still not protected against cyber and EMP, but Washington doesn't even get it. They still don't get it and grasp. They haven't wrapped their minds around this new way of warfare that is that the Chinese and the Russians are actually exercising. That's what this recent big Cybergeddon attack about it is. It's part of this. They're practicing it again, not for the first time. In the article, I point out that this is happening. You know, this large, unprecedented cyber attack of unprecedented scale that's been unleashed on the United States government and private sector. But it's happening in the context of a major nuclear forces exercise that happened on December 9th, where Vladimir Putin himself sent out the unlocking codes and personally authorized the execution of a simulated nuclear war against the United States that involved five live launches of intercontinental ballistic missiles and sub-launch ballistic missiles and a number of cruise missiles as well. Is happening in the context of Russians' demonstration of yet another anti-satellite weapon that was launched into space and demonstrated the capability to sweep the skies of U.S. satellites, which are crucial to our military and economic capabilities. So what you've got happening all at the same time, in a coordinated way, is basically a blitzkrieg in cyberspace, in outer space, and a simulated blitzkrieg in these dominions, and within the normal terrestrial space that we think of, land, sea, air, is the domain of traditional warfare. And Washington cannot connect these dots. It's beyond their strategic imagination. These things are happening right under their nose, and that's why I wrote the article, to yet again draw their attention to it. Fortunately, there are some people who get it. You know, I quote, for example, Colonel Bob Lindseth, who was on the Joint Chiefs of Staff as one of their chief intelligence officers. He gets it, and I quote him in the article, talking about how a nuclear conflict would be preceded by cyber warfare. And Admiral William Studeman, who used to be the director of the National Security Agency and acting director of CIA, and he gets it, and points out in the article that our people are elites, and our specialists have to be thinking more along the lines of these combined arms operations, cyber, nuclear, EMP, physical sabotage, all used together, not stovepiped. Part of the problem is our people, we're so far behind the eight ball, so far behind even North Korea in thinking about these things, that our specialists aren't talking to each other. Even our good scientists, the smart ones, except those who served on the EMP Commission, because what I'm saying is not my own personal discovery, but the EMP Commission, when we were working these issues, for 17 years, we read the military doctrines of our adversaries and said, this is what they plan to do.
What a good idea.
So those people, those are the people that, that handful of people on these specialized commissions get it. But the people responsible, like the people like Chris Krebs, who used to be the director of the Cyber and Infrastructure Security Agency, the chief agency responsible.
We have to take a really quick break, Dr. Private. When we come back, can you unpack some of that? Because we hear these terms tossed around all the time. But this is it's a zone that really no one deals with. The bulk of the American public doesn't deal with. And they hear we have this agency and that agency and this group and that group. Maybe you could explain kind of how they fit together a little bit when we come back. And in the meantime, if you guys are all as fed up with the whole mask thing as I am, I went searching. I went searching for some songs that would make us feel happy before we start 2021. So we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them? They move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul, then it's just your body, then they go. What shall we do about them?
Take his mask and shut, ain't wearing it no more. Y'all look at me like I'm from Mars when I don't wear it in the store. Don't even try to make me put it on or I'm walking out the door. Take this mask and shut, I ain't wearing it no more.
I'm gonna get a little recording of that and put it on my phone, and then when I walk in, then I can play it for them.
Yeah, hold it out. Put it in their face. Turn it up loud.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll just play it low as I walk through the store. How's that?
Dr. Pry, you're talking about how our agencies don't seem to get the whole cyber thing. Why do you think that is? I mean, when I heard last week that there was this massive hack with so many of our government agencies, I thought, what is our intelligence agencies doing? Why? I thought they were like on the lookout for this kind of stuff, and it looks like they're either sitting on their hands or just not even aware that there's any danger out there. What do you attribute that to?
Well, let me get to that question before we had the break. Aaron wanted me to talk about which agencies are responsible, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I won't go through a whole alphabet,
But it's like a confusing web.
But there are basically two big ones, okay? There's Cyber Command, which is subordinate. It's part of the National Security Agency, which specializes in signals intelligence. And Cyber Command is our military arm, and it's supposed to deal with the military threat. And protect our military and U.S. governmental systems. And then there's the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, you know, which was stood up during the Obama administration in 2015. And so it's a brand new agency, and it was stood up in response to the Chinese, to these mounting crises that we've had with cyber attacks. You know, it was in response to the big China attack back in 2015 that stole information on 20 or 30 million federal employees. And that's one of the other things, by the way, which is evidence about the fact that Washington doesn't know what to do. You know, because every time one of these things happens, you know, they threaten retaliation. They vow to the heavens that they're going to, that this is going to, will not stand. And economic sanctions and all kinds of other steps will be taken. And then, in effect, they do little or nothing. All the steps they take prove impotent. And our adversaries are not cowed or deterred in the least. And the next attack is worse than the last. And this one is far worse than the last. And so it's an escalating situation. And unless they finally get competent at dealing with it, it's probably going to turn from being an exercise into an actual cyber-geddon Pearl Harbor type thing. When they, just like some bully who keeps pushing you and pushing you and pushing you, and you might threaten and make bellicose sounds, but if this guy thinks that you are a weakling and that you are, your failure to respond means that you are weak, they will attack. Now, so Cyber Command is the military arm of our cybersecurity. And then CISA is our civilian arm. It's subordinate to the Department of Homeland Security. And it's supposed to protect our non-military and civilian critical infrastructures and work in a public partnership with organizations like the Electric Grid and the utilities, the critical utilities that support our electronic civilization. So there are others, but those are the two biggies, CISA and Cyber Command.
Was CISA necessary? Did we need it when they invented it?
Yes. Well, do we need it?
Sorry, that's kind of a loaded question.
It's kind of a philosophical question. No amount. I mean, that's the typical Washington response when they don't know what to do, is to stand up another agency, right?
Yeah.
And to make it sound like they look like they've done something. So one answer might be, no, that's not really what you need to do, okay? But I would say, yes, we do, precisely because Washington has no brain. You know, it has no strategic imagination. And one way of possibly getting a brain is to get a bunch of people who are expert, you know, in these matters all together in a single agency to work on the problem. And since we haven't been able to solve the problem yet, to have an agency dedicated to this is better than doing nothing, okay? However, to go to the other question that was asked, you know, the fundamental question, which is how come, why are we unable to do this? And the short answer to that is because these departments and agencies, and not just at the top, but going deep into them, are staffed with stupid, incompetent people, okay, who have no clue about what to do. And that's why Washington doesn't know what to do. And the poster child for this is Christopher Krebs, who was, until a month ago, the director of CISA, of the Cyber and Infrastructure Security Agency. Oh, and by the way, before moving on, because we've been talking about what a crisis this is, to just give some dimensions to the nature of the crisis. What Washington has been willing to admit is that at least you know, 200 major departments and agencies have been penetrated this time, and 18,000 other government and private sector entities. And these include the most important ones in government and the private sector, things like the National Nuclear Security Administration, which is responsible for maintaining our nuclear weapons, the Department of Energy, and the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which are responsible for maintaining our electric grid, maintaining its security, defense contractors who have Defense Department secrets and are responsible for building our most advanced weapon systems, just to name a few examples. And they don't know how, even yet, they don't know how far, how deep the damage is, how many agencies have been affected, how many corporations have been affected, and how deep the damage is. And I suspect the damage is actually a lot deeper, that we've been lied to for a long time about how deep this damage goes. I mean, back in 2015, during the Obama administration, you know, the excuse was, well, they stole. To make it, I think, they tried to make it look good by saying they stole information on 20 million federal employees, okay? I think it's far worse than that. And because they're kind of trying to make it sound that way, too, that for 9 months, at least 9 months, the bad guys, the Russians, have been roaming around all of these departments and agencies of the U.S. government and the private sector corporations, collecting intelligence, stealing our secrets. That's actually a good news story, putting a positive spin on it. Washington doesn't wants the so-called damage to be an intelligence operation against us, because that is not an act of war. Okay? You know, you can collect intelligence of all kinds. We do it too. Not necessarily through cyber. We're not that competent. And the other side is not so incompetent that they have left their systems vulnerable the way ours have. But any kind of intelligence collection is usually not regarded as an act of war. In the cyber realm, you get into the act of war if you are using cyber weapons. Mm. Things like worms and logic bombs and viruses and other kinds of cyber bugs that you can insert, you know, plant like bombs.
So kind of the difference between like spying and sabotage.
Exactly. So that you're sabotaging the other guy's critical infrastructures in government and the private sector, so that when a war comes, you can blow these things up, basically, and paralyze them. And I think that's what they've been doing all along. And doing it more and more and using more and more sophisticated weapons, because they can't and they get away with it. And how come now, to go back, and I apologize for being so long-winded, but to go back to that other question about why, how come we're letting them get away? And I'm not blaming Christopher Krebs for all of this, although as the director of CISA,
buck stops there. Yeah.
With him and actually with the president too, because this guy, and this is an example of, you know, why I don't think even though I support President Trump and I voted for him and I, you know, and all the rest, I've on this show and elsewhere, I've always argued that he's not George Washington. Okay. You know, because George Washington was not just a great charismatic person, but he also knew how to govern competently. And while Obama brought Christopher Krebs into his government, President Trump is the one who promoted him to be the director of CISA.
Yeah, and kept
him. Christopher Krebs.
Okay, we're going to take a really quick break so we don't cut this part short, because I think he's a name that a lot of people haven't heard, and they would like to know more. We'll be back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. You're listening to We the People, and you can join us at wethepeopleradio.us. lead in for a... Are you in there? It's very quiet.
Uh-oh.
Hey, there we go. I hear a little static. Dr. Bry?
Yes?
Oh, there he is. Okay. I was like, did you get magically muted? That's not good. That's the wrong kind of magic. That's 2020 magic. I'm ready to move out of that now. Okay, so talk to us about this guy. Why do you think he was promoted and kept this long, and then first time we hear his name is when he's getting fired, really?
Well, good question, because all through the Trump administration, I had been recommending to anybody who would listen through articles and books. In fact, I wrote two books. I mean, they weren't dedicated to saying that Christopher Krebs should be fired, okay? But I mentioned him by name, and as well as a dozen other people, you know, who were also part of the problem, who should be fired. But his name led all of them, you know, because he was the director of CISA, and not competent to be such. And I could see that this guy was slow rolling. And actually sabotaging President Trump's excellent EMP executive order to protect the country from EMP. And in my book, the one you mentioned, The Power and the Light, for example, I have a chapter where his name leads all the rest, you know, as the person who should be fired. Why did Trump promote, why he was even brought into the government in this role in the first place? I'm not going to say it bewilders me, because I know why, and I'll get... Because in Washington, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Yeah.
Okay, again, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And this guy, you know, he is a lawyer. Mind you, he's in charge of the cybersecurity infrastructure security agency, right? And he's a lawyer, and he's the director of that agency. And he's a lobbyist, and a former lobbyist for Microsoft. And his job as a lobbyist for Microsoft, which is one of these big left-wing, big tech industries, you know, his job as a lawyer for Microsoft was to ensure that there would be no government regulation of Microsoft and of their big tech buddies,
yeah.
Right?
Sure.
And this job he continued as the director of CISA. You know, I mean, he saw his job as to oppose any regulations. Rulemaking that would impose burdens on the utilities or the big high-tech giants when it came to cybersecurity or security against EMP. So he was the worst possible choice. But even if it wasn't the lobbyist part, which made him proactively bad, you know, where he's actively undermining our security, you know, he has no head. He's a lawyer. He doesn't know anything about cyber. Doesn't know anything about EMP. I might as well mention it. It used to be confidential, too, but, you know, the EMP Commission, a number of us met with this guy in the National Security Council meeting, you know, to demand, you know, why, what is going on? You know, you've got the president's EMP executive order in front of you. In fact, we met with him and a number of the other people I mentioned in my book, okay? I wasn't able to write that in the book at the time, but, you know, the Trump administration is almost over, and not unfortunately, it's not likely the president's going to come back. So I might as well break this news on the We the People radio. But we actually, and there was a face to face with this guy and a number of the other of these people, and it was led by Dr. Graham, you know, the free world's foremost expert on EMP, and he gave them their chance. He said, "What are you doing?" You know. If you have other ideas, you don't think this is an urgent problem, you know, here's your chance to say so in front of the National Security Council. Show us how we are wrong in our recommendations. Please show us how we are wrong. Justify your behavior. You know, justify your failure to act. And they looked at their shoes. They had nothing to say. They looked down and looked at their shoes. Unbelievable. You know, these people are just not intellectually competent. Now, take somebody like Christopher Krebs and multiply him by 5,000 times, and that's why we're vulnerable to EMP, because he's not alone. You know, there are people like him, mostly like him, all through the government in all these critical roles, and not just for EMP and cybersecurity. You know, you can see it in the biological warfare area, too, with this grossly incompetent, self-destructive policy towards COVID-19 that we're following.
Yeah.
I was pleased to see that Krebs finally did get fired by the president personally when he came out with that absurd statement that, and by the way, CISA is also responsible for the security of our elections against cyber interference attack, okay? And then he said this is the cleanest election in American history.
That was
a bridge too far.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he should have been fired 3 years ago. At least he should never have been hired as the director of CISA. But they went ahead and did it. You know, and obviously President Trump has to bear responsibility for that. Now, I'm sure President Trump didn't personally look at his resume or anything, but he's trusting the people around him.
Yeah.
You know, and unfortunately the president has not been good. He's got a gift for choosing people who are not competent themselves when it comes to staffing his own government. And we've got all these people who are not only not competent, but they're actually actively hostile to the presidency of Donald Trump, as Chris Krebs was. You know, Chris Krebs, you know, was a Microsoft person and an Obama loyalist, you know, not loyal to anything that President Trump wanted to do. And then, as if, you know, to continue the badness, you know, who was his successor? I know personally the successor, the guy named Brandon Wales, you know, who's just as bad as Chris Krebs is, maybe even worse. I say worse because at least Brandon Wales used to work for Senator Kyle many years ago, okay? And Senator Kyle was one of the leaders in Congress on trying to raise consciousness about EMP and get the country protected from EMP. And so you would think that one of his when a staffer from Senator Kyle went over to work for the Department of Homeland Security, that you'd have at least one good person over there, right? But no. You know, Brandon Wales is a chameleon, and he's too much like all these congressional staffers. You know, loyalty doesn't mean anything. If it means they'll do and say whatever is necessary to blend in to the institutions they work for and to get promoted, you know, this is not a Churchillian figure who's willing to have the courage of Senator Kyle's convictions anyway. Let's put it that way. And fall on a sword or fight hard, you know, for that point of view. And to me, and that's arguably even worse than Christopher Krebs, you know, because that's, Krebs could have the excuse perhaps of ignorance, you know, but having worked for Senator Kyle, Brandon Wales knows that he's betraying his country. Maybe I should restrain myself here.
I think people are thinking that, but they don't know.
And this is what I mean. You know, this is how deep it is. You know, you think, okay, we'll get rid of Christopher Krebs, so the next guy maybe, you know, has been stifled by Christopher Krebs and has been perhaps just aching to do the right thing. Correct? No, not at all. That's how deep the corruption is. You know, and that's why President Trump really failed the country when he failed to deliver on that promise of draining the swamp. All Americans knew that draining the swamp really was not just some rhetorical thing. It is a swamp. Washington is a swamp. It desperately needs to be drained. You know, thousands of these people need to be fired if we're to survive, not just for competence and for good government, but if we are to survive. And he didn't do it.
Do you think he didn't do it because he just didn't understand how deep it ran, or he didn't understand how the system really worked?
I think both. I think when he first came in, first he had never held political office, you know, elective office,
right?
And he had never worked in the Washington swamp himself. Okay. And so I think he was very naive and thought that 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 ideology wasn't as crucial as it is in Washington. And I think what he wanted, he genuinely believed that he could unite country, this deeply divided country, behind himself by saying, okay, now I'm the president, and we can drop the harsh rhetoric, okay, and go back to being good Americans again. And I'm going to put extend an olive branch to you guys. I'm going to give an olive branch to you, Obama, hold over, by letting you keep your job.
Yeah,
and I'm giving
an olive
branch
too.
To you establishment Republicans by letting you guys not only keep your job, but I'm going to bring you into my administration. But, you know, when I visited the National Security Council staff in 2017 in the middle of President Trump's presidency, two-thirds of his NSC staff were still Obama holdovers. You know, he wasn't even in the process of firing these people, even though they had already betrayed him during those 2 years. He still, you know, didn't get it, I think. And I don't think he got it right up until Chris Krebs. I'm not sure he still gets it. Which is why even if President Trump by some miracle comes back, I'm not sure he's learned his lesson, even now. But certainly in the beginning and throughout his administration, the 4 years of his administration, he had tried this long experiment of trying to unite the country behind himself. And he was really the only anti-establishment person in his own whole administration. You know, what he needed to do, and it wasn't as if he made no sacrifice. You know, most of the people that supported him and were activists to get him elected did not get jobs in his administration. Only a handful did. People like Sebastian Gorka, for example. And these people were let go, you know, I think before the first year of his administration was over, because the swamp got them, you know. General Flynn was an anti-establishment guy, and he didn't even get a chance to work for more than a couple of days. And, and I think President Trump was naive, and so was Vice President Pence, you know, about the deepness of the hostility, I don't think he understood that this country is in the midst of a cold civil war.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't really understand that he needed troops loyal to him who were willing to tear in to the establishment and reform it, or if necessary, destroy it.
Yeah, I think he took it a little bit like a business. If you take over a company, you don't just fire everybody. That's not the way it works in the corporate world.
I think he was hoping that everybody would just roll over and become loyal.
They're all professionals, because, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
that's the misnomer, is they're all professionals. They're just, you know, they'll do their job, which didn't take place. We've got to take a really quick break. We're going to come right back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and you're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back, though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.
Bill didn't like that one. Too bad.
Ugh.
Too bad. You're fired.
Oy.
You're fired. You're fired as the as the music czar. Oh, that's right. You don't do any of
that's
it.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't sit there for hours on end looking for music.
I'm certainly not looking forward to 2021 and the new age.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a hold your breath and not sure if you should jump, stand still, hide.
But
yeah.
In addition, we've been talking about, you know, the bad choices that led to, you know, President Trump's failure to drain the swamp, and his which has cost him his presidency. I mean, in the end, this great fault, you know, where he thought that people would be, like in business, as you were saying before the break, that he thought these people were professionals.
Yeah.
You know, in the private sector, a professional is somebody like a lawyer, you know, who can argue either side of a question.
Or an architect
competence.
Or, I mean, there's
yeah.
lots of
you
people.
You just pay them. And,
yep.
And they'll do their job the way you want them to do it. But that's not how it is in Washington. Ideology is everything. For most, 99% of the people, they're there because they have ideological beliefs. And if you make the mistake of keeping these people in your administration and they're against you, they're going to work to undermine you. And that's what happened. And as a consequence, his failure to understand that, maybe he did understood it. But he was never able to correct the situation. Never found, just wasn't good at firing people, which is surprising.
Yeah, which was like his best thing.
That was why most people did vote for him, because of his ability to say you're fired on
yeah.
an Apprentice television show, and figured he would do that, and he didn't do it, and unfortunately not. In addition to not draining the swamp and keeping the bad people, he had very, very bad decisions were made in his name. Maybe it wasn't his personal choice, but very bad decisions were made in his name by firing the good people that were loyal to him. Like I mentioned, Sebastian Gorka, you know, who was one of the best advisors I think he had on foreign and defense policy. And yet his enemies persuaded him to let Sebastian go. Jim Woolsey was never given a job in the Trump administration. He was one of the only, you know, senior members of the intelligence community, you know, widely recognized, one of the great men in the intelligence community who actually endorsed Trump. Everybody else, including people who had served in Republican administrations, were against Trump, but Woolsey defied them all and paid a big price to it among his colleagues. And he was not brought into the administration. Just a couple of months ago, another little-known name, a friend of mine, Lisa Gordon Haggerty, she was the, but that name, that person, in some of these departments and agencies, the job they do is so important that all of our lives depend upon them. We don't know who these people are, but Lisa. She was the director of the administrator of the National Nuclear Security Administration. So she was responsible for modernization and maintenance of our nuclear deterrent. And Trump brought her in. She was a pro-Trumper. And for years, she's done a heroic job fighting against the whole Obama held over NNSA. I mean, so he put her in charge of this thing. The only one, sort of like parachuting her into enemy territory, to fight against the thousands of people who are against him in the NNSA. And despite that, she was working miracles, you know. I mean, she managed to accomplish some things, significant things, and move forward President Trump's agenda in terms of upgrading, you know. We didn't develop any new nuclear weapons, which is what we should be doing. But at least she did manage to accelerate the life extension programs for the old weapons, and actually did introduce a "quote unquote" new weapon. You know, this new W-76 Mod 2. You know, which is a tactical nuclear weapon. It's really an old design that's been changed so that we to kind of be a new weapon. But that's a huge accomplishment considering the fact that. There hasn't been anything like that done, you know, for decades in the U.S. And her enemies in the Department of Energy, because the Department of Energy, which has become very leftist, was taken over by Obama, and it's got all these climate change idiots running the Department of Energy now. But the Department of Energy always wanted to take over the NNSA, not because they love the nuclear weapons, but because they want to stop the modernization of our nuclear weapons. They're very anti-nuclear. You know, that's the value system in the Department of Energy. And they were trying to get her fired. And they finally did. They finally managed to convince the idiot that runs the Department of Energy, who was another Trump appointee, another lawyer. These people go in there, and then they rely on their staff. They rely on the advice of their staff, who are who are inherited from the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. And so the staffs basically steered them in a direction to support Obama policies. And they basically whispered in the ear of the director of the Department of Energy to say, well, you know, you should control the NNSA, too. And every lawyer, bureaucrat, wants to be king of the world and expand his turf. And so he started a bureaucratic war, an internal war, against removing Lisa Gordon Haggerty because she resisted that, because she knew that if DOE took over NNSA, that they would go against President Trump's policy of modernizing, improving, and extending the life of our nuclear deterrent. And he let her get fired. She was forced out of the NNSA. So the bad judgment has been in two directions, you know, keeping on your enemies who want to destroy you and undermine the Trump administration's policies and firing your best people, you know, which has been going on. Not that he brought that many of his best people in. You know, there's relatively few people that President Trump actually brought in to head departments and agencies, parachuting them into enemy territory, as it were, and then giving them mission impossibles to try to make departments and agencies that were hostile to the president actually work. Lisa was one of the few heroes that was able to do it. And she was let go in disgrace, you know, outrageous, just outrageous. And so, you know, this is I mean, it's a little off topic but this is every civilization goes through this process where it starts off sort of the way we did in the aftermath during World War II and its aftermath, where you become a world power, great power, in America's case, you know, a superpower, because you have a generation, a great generation of extremely talented and gifted people who are running things. Excellent generals, excellent statesmen, excellent administrators who know how to make things happen. And when I look at the America that I grew up in, you know, it's kind of understandable how you've got a generation older people like Bernie Sanders, who thinks socialism can work, because they too grew up in an America that seemed capable of doing anything. You know, it could defeat Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan. It invented the atomic bomb in 3 years. It invented nuclear reactors and nuclear energy. It's built a national highway system as great as that of the Roman Empire in a few years, and sent a man to the moon and accomplished all kinds of scientific and technological and miracles, and government seemed capable of doing anything because it had this highly proficient great generation in charge.
We show up a little bit later. We've got you hostage for the second hour. We've got to take a break here for some news and whatnot, and we'll be right back. Our guest is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and you are listening to We the People Radio. Join us at wethepeopleradio.us.
But instead it just kept on raining, a veil of tears for the virgin birth. I remember one Christmas morning, a winter's light and a distant choir, the peal of a bell and that Christmas tree smell, and eyes full of tinsel and fire.
Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. Robert's been helping us. He aced out Bill's sound there, so Bill's gonna just read my lips.
Do I have a hot mic?
You do.
Oh, well, there you go. I guess I can.
You have a hot voice and a hot mic.
Yes.
The rest of it we'll just leave alone.
All right.
Because this is family radio.
There we go. There, now I'm
Travis
like,
is
great.
Falling on the button in there.
We have a new engineer under the table. Hey, our sponsor this hour is Pat May Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. If you need a tractor or a mower or any steel products, chainsaws, weed whackers, trimmers, generator. You name it. Honda generators,
yeah.
They've got those in stock. Go by and see them. They're 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, just off I-5. And you can also give them a call, 226-9226, or get them on the web at papaymachinery.com.
Ta-da!
There you go.
Yeah, because you know what? This is a kind of place, actually, you know, a lot of places in this country you need a generator. That's a pretty common thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like that time of year, too. It's interesting. We need them in the summer because they shut the power off when the wind blows. And then you need them in the winter
when the wind blows and snow knocks down all your power lines. It's a win-win if you have a generator.
Yeah, so much for that. Everybody who pictures everyone in California sitting on a beach. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a lot more to the state than that, actually. And we're at the far, far, far other end. We're as far away from Mayor Garcetti as we can get.
Yeah.
Actually, without living in Oregon.
I don't even own a surfboard.
Which puts us way too close to Cape Brown. We're really kind of sandwiched in here.
Yeah. We got to watch our step.
Yeah, we do. Got to be careful if you move. You got to do your homework. Oh, my goodness. Well, we're continuing on with our program that we've called Cybergeddon, because that's what Dr. Pry really wanted to call it, and that's the name of his article. And you can find that all at wethepeopleradio.us. You can, it's a Word document, so you could pull it and email it and send it, or you could just read it right there on the page. Made it really super easy for you. It did appear on Newsmax, but it was under a paid heading for, was it Premium Pilgrims? It was a P word. What was it, Dr. Platinum. There you go.
Pilgrims.
I knew it wasn't Pilgrims.
It wasn't Pilgrims.
And Pilgrims on the brain. I don't know what's wrong
Newsmax.
With me. Newsmax Platinum. Maybe they change it to Pilgrims. Maybe they'll like my idea. I'm mostly probably
you have
not.
Thanksgiving on the mind, I think.
I was thinking about turkey. I'm always thinking about turkey. It's terrible. It's a sickness. All right. So this hour, where would you like to take us? Time always goes way too fast.
Maybe we should talk about solutions and not just for EMP and cyber, because I think the failing of Washington to connect the dots. I mean, Washington is failing us in every respect. They've become the new Rome, the new Rome of the late empire just before the Dark Ages. I'd mentioned earlier in the show how I'm not looking forward to 2021. I'm clinging to 2020 because it's the last of the America.
And it was such a bad year, too. That's just horrifying that we would cling to a year like this.
Bad as it is. Yeah, I think the America of 2021 is going to begin the transformation of our country into something that will be unrecognizable.
Yeah, I think that's
the beginning of a one-party authoritarian system. And, with our own cultural revolution happening. And 2020 will be looked back upon with great nostalgia by us as the last of a golden age. Terrible as the experiences were, there are still vestiges left of us being the illusion of being a constitutional democracy and something close to what the founders had in mind. And the rejection of our history and of our values had not yet become normative, and that's going to be the powers that be are going to try to impose that upon us. And, this is, these are failures more fundamental than the technological failures like failing to protect us against EMP and cyber, which are no less important, of course, because our lives depend upon those things. Mm-hmm. And at least for people like me, the first duty is, regardless of what the nature of the government is, the first duty is to try to keep the American people alive, try to keep our country safe, because as long as there's life, there's hope. And I think there's always going to be a lot of hope, and not because I think that President Trump is going to work some kind of a miracle and get a second term. I don't think that's going to happen. And I hate to say that. That's not a popular thing to say. It's not a popular thing to say in my own family. And
so why do you say that? we're going to be popular,
might
as well.
Or why do I think this?
Yeah.
Or why? Because, well, let's unpackage it. First, why is it not a popular thing to say?
I know that one.
Yeah, right. You know, people around here, including my neighbors, still have Trump signs up. You know, there's a gentleman who's got an American flag upside down and Trump signs all across his front fence, you know, because they see, they know the election was stolen, and they know that their constitutional republic not only is at risk, but has actually already been overturned by the results of the fake election. And the Trump has sort of become an icon of the symbol of resistance. And people, and if you're not for Trump, then you're against democracy and freedom. And but it's never been for me about the personality or the man. You know, Trump was important because he was leading a movement, and it's the movement that's important. You know, the movement to preserve the traditional America of the founders, to traditional Judeo-Christian values that have always run this society, not just the man himself. And he deserved to be lionized and respected because I think he was such a great popular voice. You know, he articulated that. He was willing to fight back, unlike the Republican Party. He was willing to fight back against these people and stand up to them. But where he failed, and this is where he fails the test of being George Washington or the greatest American president in history or an Abraham Lincoln, is that it takes more than the courage to speak. You know, it also takes the courage and the wisdom to rule, to run the country, to be an administrator, to pay attention to government. You know, who is in charge of your vision? And he fails that on such a huge score. You know, by his failure to bring in his own people, to bring in Main Street America to run his government instead of relying on the Washington bureaucracy. And I know that there are, including my own family, you know, there are people that are thinking that he's going to work another miracle by invoking the Insurrection Act, for example. All right? You know, and to try to protect the country, protect our, because the election was stolen. I believe that. I think he's got a prima facie case that the election was stolen. And that he would be justified in invoking the Insurrection Act, which would mean imposing martial law. It would mean establishing military courts and tribunals, you know, to have trials. And to throw people who were responsible for this conspiracy into prison, so I don't even argue with them that he would be justified in invoking the Insurrection Act, you know, because I think an insurrection has happened. You know, my concern there is that Trump has proven that he would lose, he would fail, he won't be able to competently implement the Insurrection Act and save the country by that means. You know, because when he had the full powers of the presidency behind him, and he was, before he became a lame duck, when he was the full commander-in-chief and had, you know, he was not able to stop them from stealing the election in the first place. So it'll be much more difficult for him to try to use the Insurrection Act to keep power and to keep out of power those who have tried to steal it. I think he will fail. I think if he does that, he'll end up in jail, and his Insurrection Act allies will end up in jail, and it will provide the perfect excuse for a Biden administration to themselves invoke the Insurrection mm-hmm. Act against Trump supporters and conservatives and moderates and everybody. And if you think the oppression of COVID-19 is bad, you know, it will accelerate the process of have them sending the police to your door to get your guns, you know, and to shut up shows like this on the basis of it being insurrection, and it will accelerate us becoming a totalitarian state. And in this, you know, if you think objectively about President Trump's real legacy, and in my, mind you, I'm saying this as a person who has supported him and has, you know, but I think part of being a conservative is that we don't worship personalities. You know, we look at reality, you know, and he hasn't been that great a leader for the reasons I've been talking about, but like the last year of his presidency, I mean, I think everybody gets it now, or most conservatives do, that COVID-19 was not the plague. It was not the Spanish influenza. And that President Trump did, just like Nixon could only go to China, you know, because he was a conservative, only a conservative or somebody with the kind of backing that President Trump had from the conservative movement, only he could kick open the door to totalitarianism with these COVID-19 policies. You know, which trampled upon the Constitution and the Bill of Rights of people and established unprecedented actions in this country's history.
Yeah, and you know, we seem to be unable to reel that back and make it stop.
Well, of course.
We've got we have to take a really quick break. I thought this would be a fitting Christmas song in light of where we're headed. Kind of silly, but thought you'd enjoy it. You're listening to We the People, and you can join us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Christmas at Ground Zero, there's music in the air. The sleigh bells are ringing and the carolers are singing while the air raid sirens blare. It's Christmas at Ground Zero, the button has been pressed. The radio just let us know that this is not a test. Everywhere the atom bombs are dropping, it's the end of all humanity. No more time for last minute shopping. It's time to face your final destiny. It's Christmas at Ground Zero. There's panic in the crowd. We can dodge debris while we trim the tree underneath a mushroom cloud.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass lies a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start.
There we go. So,
yeah, before we rudely interrupted, I think you're absolutely right. I think 2021 has the potential of becoming much, much, much worse.
So I'll have to play that song again next
2020.
Year.
Yeah,
probably have to play the whole thing. Yeah,
if you're allowed, if you guys are allowed to continue speaking.
Exactly.
Hope you are.
Exactly.
It's interesting because the only difficulty we've had posting, I've never had difficulty posting the audio. We had difficulty posting video of the program when we used Wuhan in the title of one of the videos. And just by taking Wuhan out and, I don't know, we put in China or, I don't know, I think we just replaced the word Wuhan. And that same video was posted again. So, obviously, you know, it was a keyword-specific block, but other than that, we really don't get blocked, she said before the website crashed.
Not yet, you haven't. It isn't 2021 yet, and you haven't had the new administration take power
know,
yet.
I know it. Where they want to re-educate us. Isn't that always the guys, the re-education camps?
Right. I've been, of course, as usual, the gloom and doom kind of guy here. But let's talk about the bright side. You had asked me that a half an hour ago about what is the bright side.
I alluded to
the fact that there is one, and then didn't talk about that. But there is a bright side to this, I guess. Because God and history move in mysterious ways, and everybody assumes that saving America equates to saving President Trump's next term, which I think there's no prospect of that happening. But in fact, In fact, the best thing that could happen is maybe no Trump second term. Because I think we would have gotten more of the Trump first term, and contrary to Lou Dobbs, you know, I don't think that President Trump, you know, given his record, is going to be the most consequential president in American history. You know, he's been a road bump on our road toward totalitarianism, basically, you know, by his ineffectiveness in government. And in effect, we'd get another 4 years of the good rhetoric that we all enjoy, but no progress in terms of rolling back the totalitarian left-wing socialist tide, just like we haven't gotten any progress in decades from the Republican Party. You know, when I look at the America I grew up in and where we are today, despite all my activism and walking in the snows for Ronald Reagan and, working for the Republicans and all the money given to the Republicans, the America we have today is almost unrecognizable and much closer to what the far left has wanted than what conservatives have wanted. And this is what may be the bright spot, because the stage may be set for a peaceful second American revolution. You know, the prospect, the problem has always been Washington. That's the problem. That's the great departure from the vision of the founders about how our government should run. Governance was not supposed to come mostly out of Washington. You know, government was always supposed to be closest to the people. Your local government was supposed to be more important in your life than your state government, and the state government more important in your life than the federal government. And all that's been stood on its head, you know, in the 20th century, basically. And, and now that we basically have this totalitarian, authoritarian movement that's been unleashed, made possible by President Trump's opening the door with COVID-19, you know, so that governments think nothing about trampling on people's civil liberties, costing them their means of living by shutting down the private sector, controlling religious attendance and all the right and the rest, we will be put to the test. We will be put to the test now about whether Americans really are an exceptional civilization. I think we are. I think enough of us still are. Maybe not a majority, but enough to have a revolution. Even the original American Revolution was won by only a third of the population. You know, only a third of Americans supported the American Revolution originally. A third of them were Tories, and the other third were apathetic, indifferent to the outcome. And in with modern communications and all the rest, you know, you might be able to have a conservative, peaceful revolution with less than a third of the population actively being activist. And and how would a conservative, peaceful revolution work? Well, we could look to what Gandhi did in India. You know, in the end of the day, your freedom is a personal choice that's in your own hands, and you can choose to obey or disobey. And that power to disobey is the power of freedom, the power of yourself to be a free individual. You know, you can refuse to wear a mask. You can refuse to close your store and stay open for business. You can refuse to surrender your gun. You know, you can homeschool your kids. You can stop paying taxes. And if we all organize, if enough conservatives organize and do this, you know, you can have that peaceful second American revolution. They cannot put millions of us into jail. There's not enough prison space for that. And if they try, well, that's why we have a Second Amendment. And it would be their choice, you know, to push us over the edge into a hot civil war if that were to happen. But I think that I've talked a lot about, you know, how President Trump didn't know how to govern. Well, the American left, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, the Dr. Fauci's in our government, they know even less than President Trump about how to govern. They're even more incompetent than he is.
And which is scary because they've been there for how long and they still don't get it.
Fauci spends all his time on TV. I mean, he's one show after the next. I think he's just angling for a, you know, spot on CNN or something.
Oh, he loves the power. He loves the power. I mean, he's spent his whole life, as a paid government functionary. And all of these people who have been in this establishment who've always had an elevated version of the real role that they should play, this is their chance to live out their fantasy life. I think Fauci's in his 80s or something like that. I don't think he cares whether he gets a high-paying job at CNN.
I think he just likes the camera. You know, it's like, it's me, the expert. And
he loves the camera because he's a narcissist and a megalomaniac.
Yeah.
And he loves not just being on television, but he loves the fact that he can impose his will.
Yes.
You know, on the American people and get praised for it.
And it doesn't matter how many times he's wrong.
Right. And they don't care about the damage they're really doing. You know, in the end of the day, they convince themselves that, oh, well, they're doing it for the people's good, and the people just aren't smart enough. And multiply Dr. Fauci, you know, by a hundred thousand, and that's what you've got in Washington. You know, bureaucrats like that who think they're smarter than we are and know better than we do how to run our lives. And because that's the fundamental difference between the left and the right in terms of political philosophy. You know, conservatives and the founders believe that every individual is more competent to make their own choices, that they should be free to choose, you know, because they know best what's best for them. And that collectively, it's better for society and it builds a stronger civilization by having those more efficient, wiser decisions made by individuals than it is by a handful of tyrants, even if there are a couple million of them in Washington, by a million tyrants, you know, in Washington, D.C., who think they know better than all of us for making those decisions. But we can just take the power away from them by starting to just ignore them. Oh, it's breaking the law. Yes, it'd be breaking their law, you know, but it's not breaking natural law, and it's not breaking God's law.
Well, and most of these things aren't laws anyway.
And they're unconstitutional, too.
Yeah,
you know,
there's
unfortunately,
that.
We've arrived at a point, you know, where our judicial system is also so corrupt that they are silent in the face of these drastic violations of people's constitutional liberties and their rights under the Bill of Rights. And so we are preserving America by our personal choices in our personal lives, in our personal space. The America of the founders will continue to exist. And, you know, and we're not even fighting the feds. You know, we're using violence to do that. We're doing it peacefully. If it comes to it, if they force the issue, you know, we will have to fight. But hopefully it won't come to that. And I don't think it will, because these people, in the end of the day, in their deepest being, are cowards. And
we haven't even exhausted our options yet. I mean, there's a really strong recall going for Gavin Newsom in the state of California, and anybody who lives in California and is a registered voter who has not signed that yet should go to recallgavin2020.com. You can print the petition page. It's one-sided, 8.5 by 11, super simple, no tricks. Name, address, name, signature, physical address, and it gives you space for four more signatures, and mail it to the coordinators. Go on that website and look at where to send it before you take it to your county. They're keeping track of all the signatures so they'll know if they all were counted or not. Got to take a quick break. We'll be right back on that happy note. And you're listening to We the People. You can join us at wethepeopleradio.us.
You're a primer America. There's a growing feeling of hysteria. Conditioned to receive.
to keep on fighting for, indeed. But I don't know. I don't think it ever stops. So, Dr. Pry, when you know, from your vantage point, it's what's it look like over there? Because here, I'm finding so many people do not. I guess my one pet peeve is they don't know what the Secretary of State does. They don't realize how important that is and how that's the person who cleans up your voter rolls and safeguards your elections and whatnot. And these people are elected in our states. And then a time like this happens and we really need them to be, professionals or, not liars. How about that? And it turns out they're not. And surprise.
Well, that's why I don't believe in the. I mean, I do think, for example, what you had suggested about recalling the governor. Yeah, sure. I think people should continue to vote and continue to exercise and attempt to work, quote unquote, through the system. But I don't think they should pin their hopes on that anymore. Because I think the system is rigged. I think the system is going to get even more rigged with the Biden administration coming in. We won't be able to trust any future election. We won't be able to trust any future petition, like the one you're talking about, that it's going to be honestly weighed and considered, and that you can trust the authorities. We're looking at a takeover of Buy America by soft totalitarianism. That's always how it starts, you know. I mean, when Hitler came to power in 1933, you know, it wasn't just the raging tyrant. He had all kinds of high-minded welfare programs, specializations for the poor, increasing the pay of workers, public works that were going on. That's why he had a lot of support, not just in Germany, but outside of Germany before the inevitable happened, as always does when you are dealing with tyrants and totalitarian movements. It may happen sooner here. But that's why I think the most effective thing is going to be for people, large numbers of people, millions of Americans, to rebel peacefully by refusing to obey. And that's going to shake the elites to their core. We've never had that happen before. A Tea Party movement, as it were, but writ very large, where people are basically all those Trump voters are saying, we don't accept you. You're not our president. You're not our government. You know, you didn't get these things legitimately, and you're not willing to institute reforms to convince us that you hold power legitimately. That's going to scare them, I think even more so than the Republican Party, cowards that they are, were scared by Black Lives Matter and Antifa. Look at how quickly they caved on so many issues, including canceling our own history, because Antifa didn't like it, Black Lives Matter didn't like it, because they exercised violence. And not even a lot of violence compared to something like the American Civil War, a theater of violence and the burning of thousands of stores if you put it all collectively together and that sort of thing. But it wasn't the kind of violence that you had in the Bolshevik Revolution. It's one of the things that's so disappointing about Washington and especially the Republican Party and the leaders who were charged with protecting our country. How ineffective they have proven, how disgustingly ineffectual against these idiots, that cause violence in our streets. Well, I think the idiots on the other party are also equally cowardly and not used to being challenged for the moral high ground. They're used to being obeyed. And that's what they're counting on. They're counting on the idea that Americans are not an exceptional people, that most of us are going to be sheeple, and we're going to obey, and that we'll have a European-type system. And maybe they're right. Maybe our republic has reached the end of its rope. Most republics are not long-lived. you know, the longest lived one, the Roman Republic, lasted 300 years. Most of them turn into tyrannies eventually, and maybe we are at that point, but I don't think so. When I drive around and I see all of these people who, you know, have fought with everything that's in them, you know, to try to save this country by supporting President Trump and by supporting the Republicans, you know, I think that Americans are an exceptional people, and they still understand. The grassroots Americans still understand. What I hope they will discover in themselves in this second American Revolution I'm talking about is that for all of them, they will find that they are their own best leaders, that the grassroots are their own best leaders, and that every man and woman is their own best leader. You know, the big mistake has been trusting the Republican Party and its leaders. And even the big mistake has been trusting President Trump as if he has some kind of magical powers, when in fact he hasn't really been a very good leader. We have given a second American Revolution, a peaceful second American Revolution, has been decades in the coming. We have been, as a people, enormously patient in giving the system a chance to work, but has failed us. I think the Democrats have been stealing elections for years, and the leadership of the Republican Party. I mean, every day, I'm sure all of your, most of your listeners, people who are, you know, conservative, get these appeals for cash donations because of the races in Georgia. The races in Georgia are so crucial, you know, so that even if President Trump is out of office, so that we'll hold on to the Senate. Supposedly, that'll be the great bulwark of our freedoms. Don't believe it. You know, the Republican Party has proven itself to be so weak and cowardly that even if we control the Senate, under the leadership of people like Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham, they will cave. They will cave. They are no bulwarks of our freedom. We have to be our own bulwark for our own for our freedom, and we have to be our own best leaders.
However, the idea of Chuck Schumer running the Senate is enough to terrify even people who don't follow politics.
True, but maybe that's what God has in mind, you know, that we need a taste. Don't forget what brought President Trump to office in the first place.
That's
true. 8 years of Barack Obama and the Democrat Party, right? Maybe we need 4 years of Chuck Schumer in charge of the Senate and Kamala Harris in charge of the White House to move the American people to finally enact that second American Revolution, a revolution not run by the Republican Party, but by the grassroots, by the American people themselves, taking their freedom back by their power to choose, by their power to disobey, by their power to refuse to be tyrannized. You know, I think I love the rank and file of the American people, the great conservative activists, those people who have such faith and have those signs still up in their yards, you know, hoping and praying that Trump is going to somehow come back. They remind me of the Republican Party has been like bad Confederate generals. You know, I'm thinking of General Hood. You know, the Republican Party would like to think that they were a great Confederate general, like General Lee. And their genius, their strategic genius over the decades has been overwhelmed by the powers of the Democrat Party. In fact, that isn't what's happened. And Trump himself has been no General Lee. They've all been like a General Hood. They say the right things, get you to follow the man on the white horse. General Hood was a very charismatic leader. He had lost an arm, he had lost a leg in the American Civil War. Very charismatic leader, very brave man, and the troops would follow him anywhere. He did. But he was a terrible battlefield tactician, or a terrible strategist anyway. And just like the Republican Party has been. And whenever the Republican Party gets in trouble, you know, I mean, they mismanage things, and they don't consult the troops, and ignore the troops, you know, for year after year, get themselves in trouble, and then when they're about to lose everything, they come to us, for our money, for our energy, for our work, to save them, okay? And the Republican Party reminds me of General Hood in the last years of the Civil War, you know, when he had these two catastrophic battles, you know, the Battle of Franklin and the last Battle of Chattanooga, you know, where he basically sends the flower of what's left of the Southern youth, you know, in these frontal assaults against entrenched enemy positions and has them blown away. You know, so the flower of Southern manhood is left dead in the field by 1865. That's the Republican Party for you. You know, we don't need General Hood to send us to our deaths. I mean, I'm not sending a dollar to the Republican National Committee anymore. You know, I've been supporting them all my life. They are part of the problem. And I'm, you know, we need to get organized ourselves at a grassroots level. We need to do our own general aim. Maybe we need a completely different political party, though I don't think that'll matter under these circumstances because elections can't be trusted.
Well, and besides that, then you just have everybody running all over the place and the Democrats are in charge of us forever.
I don't think so. Not if we refuse, we'll be in charge of ourselves.
Oh, there you go. Okay, how about this? Let's talk about this a little bit more on the backside. Up to the top of the hour, our guest is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. You're listening to We the People, and you can join us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Don't turn around, uh-oh. Judge of the colors out in town, uh-oh. It's got the power, and you're so weak, and your frustration will not let you speak. La, 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 la.
We'll sing a victory tune and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
Because at the end of the day, that solves everything. That's how we fix it. I guess so. The revolution did kind of start in a saloon. You know, there's a lot of saloons involved in that. I think they didn't call them that before, but I don't know. We have to go back to saloon meetings. I'm in.
Tavern meetings. You might actually have put your finger on why we... I mean, that's one of the things that I am a little fearful about why a second American Revolution may not work, you know, because the first one... There was more of a sense of community at the grassroots level.
Yeah.
Sense of community formed in places like taverns, churches. People had their own militias. Technology has made us into individual little islands where we don't even know our neighbors anymore. That might have to change if we're going to be free and organize, you know, to resist what's coming. But I guess we're almost out of time here.
Imagine that.
That Aaron Ryan show trying to solve the world's problems 2 hours at a time.
That's right. We're going to take a bite out of the badness of the day. You know, the things that you were, you know, obviously sometimes it's not popular to, or, you know, it's not popular to criticize the president. But like I was just telling Robert during the break, the foreign aid that the president is now complaining about, those figures came right out of his budget request, and in some cases they funded it lower than he requested.
I know he hasn't been in charge of his own
right. He hasn't paid attention, and it's not in the coronavirus bill. It's in the year end spending bill, and so telling everyone, oh my God, they took the coronavirus bill and loaded it up with pork. It's like, are you kidding me? That was in your budget, has been in your budget, and you knew that was in the spending bill, but suddenly those have become conflated just so everyone can get mad. And I don't know, I don't find that helpful.
maybe he didn't know. I mean, he's such a hands-off president, you know. We know he works hard. I mean, he works hard at being a spokesman, okay, and running for election. But when he was in charge of the government, he certainly didn't work hard in terms of deciding who should be in his government. You know, he delegates responsibility far more than a really great president should. You know, delegates responsibility in terms of who should run CISA, the CIA, all the major departments and agencies of his government. A hands-off president in terms of his budget and these other technical things. You know, I think he has.
Well, like look at the virus company. I was just going to say, look at the virus bill that's been sitting there since what, July. They've been going back and forth and back and forth, and finally they arrive at a deal on that. And then all of a sudden he wants to blow it up. It was supposedly a deal he approved, and it didn't have foreign aid in it. Again, that was in the budget, but suddenly he goes from $600 payments to individuals, which is $166 billion, and now wants to jack that up to $2,000 payments. That's $500+ billion. I don't think that's going to happen, but who does that after 6 months of negotiating?
And who, we shouldn't have been doing it at all. What kind of a conservative president listens to Dr. Fauci?
Well, there's that. Shuts down the economy.
In the first place, I mean, it's appalling that somebody who's supposed to be a conservative president does that. And for all of those who are conservatives out there, I mean, it's an obligation. That's one of the differences between conservatives and socialists, you know, is that we are suspicious of our government and our leaders and pay attention to them because we are in charge. We are in charge. They work for us. And so it isn't being disloyal or wrong to criticize even our own president. That's what we're supposed to do. That's how we stay free. And I think a dose of realism is definitely needed here, you know, about, well, you know, hoping and praying that Trump is going to be pull off some kind of a miracle and get himself a second term. Maybe we shouldn't be hoping and praying for that. And this is no endorsement of Biden and Kamala Harris.
I was going to say, let's not be confused. We're actually not. This would not be Biden and Harris team. Yeah.
Right. It's just that there are alternatives to achieving a second American Revolution, which is really the way back to what this country needs to be, away from the power of Washington. President Trump didn't do anything to roll back the power of Washington. You know, and so that's been an enormous disappointment, and that should be understood as such by our people. You know, we shouldn't leave everything on the field for perhaps for the cause of a second Trump term, you know, but hold back that for, you know, for what I've been talking about, a project where we have a second American Revolution from the grassroots up, a Tea Party movement writ large. I think that something like that is what's going to be really necessary to defeat the enemy within and get America to the place that it should have been, that the Republican Party has been promising to lead us to for decades, but has failed to do, you know, because they've been part of the problem, too, a more insidious part of the problem, you know, because they have been lying to us about what they really believe, guys like Mitchell and Graham, who are also just megalomaniacs and love being part of the aristocracy that lords over us and their wealthy relationships with the Chamber of Commerce and the like. You know, they, in the end of the day, they could care less about the Second Amendment and the First Amendment and all the other amendments and constitutional restrictions on government power. Lindsey Graham was actually defending the foreign aid to Pakistan for gender studies in Pakistan, defending that. Unbelievable, you know. So this is the nature, you know, of the problem that we have, and it is not disloyal or wrong to criticize our government, including President Trump.
No,
you know,
but it's also
grown up and realistic.
It's also important for people to realize that you don't get to just rewrite the thing. I mean, I take a lot of phone calls, and I had a call from somebody who wanted the president to fix the election and solve that. And I said, well, okay, he can sue. You know, we went through the choices. And then Congress needs to do it then. They need to arrest these people. And I'm like, Congress doesn't get to arrest people. The people who make the laws don't get to enforce them. And so folks that would consider themselves constitutionalists often throw out that three co-equal branch thing when it just isn't getting the job done. But that doesn't mean we should throw it out.
And well, it's another failure of the president. I mean, his chief job, you know, when he was in charge of the government is to ensure that we have free and fair elections. And how he expected that to happen with Chris Krebs in charge of CISA escapes me.
Yeah, that's pretty scary to find out at this point.
Yeah, the man in many ways, the president in many ways, has been the author of his own destruction, the loss of his power, and unfortunately endangered all of our national security and our freedoms in the process of his gross mismanagement of the government. Maybe it's a philosophy he brought with him from the private sector, where he thought he could trust so-called professionals to do the detailed thing.
But a lot of that stuff isn't getting done. I mean, he's leaving office, and we still have like the Klamath Compact Commission. The federal appointee is still from the Obama era, because the other one is sitting on somebody's desk in OMB and hasn't been signed yet.
One of my biggest disappointments and criticisms too has been, you know, the president himself contributes to this fiction about COVID-19 being the plague. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, here's some. It's got a 99.987% survival rate.
It's got a higher survival rate than the vaccine has efficacy. But that's a whole different deal. We will chat with you again very soon. Clock's going to cut us off at the pass. We've been visiting with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. We thank you for joining us right after Christmas. And cross your fingers for 2021. We will talk to everyone next week. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Christmas we get, we deserve.